The USDA is keenly aware of the challenges facing our industry, and there are a multitude of programs out there to support our growers.
It's about supply chains. It's about maximizing opportunities for farmers, for processors, for the U.S. food supply chain to be able to maximize their opportunities and bring more of the food dollar back to farmers and ranchers.
Today, we get the unique opportunity to sit down with USDA Undersecretary Jenny Moffitt to talk about programs ranging from regional food systems to climate smart agriculture and beyond.
This copyrighted podcast is presented by the U.S. Highbush Blueberry Council. The opinions and views shared by those of non-paid guests on the business of blueberries are those of our guests and do not represent the views, positions, or policies of the USHBC. The blueberry industry is like no other. Passionate, resilient, and innovative. This podcast is your source for the latest information on the management, markets, research, and technology related to blueberry production. This is the business of blueberries. Here's your host, President of the U.S. Highbush Blueberry Council, Casey Cronquist.
Well, welcome back to another episode of the Business of Blueberries, the only podcast dedicated exclusively to the blueberry industry. This past August, Jenny Lester Moffitt was confirmed to serve as Undersecretary for Marketing and Regulatory Programs at USDA. This appointment was made after 6 years of serving as the Undersecretary of the California Department of Food and Agriculture. Upon her appointment, Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack said that her experience and dedication to the craft, including growing up and working on an organic farm, will help elevate USDA's work to support our producers and protect the health and value of America's agriculture and natural resources. We are very privileged to have Undersecretary Moffitt joining us here today to talk about her journey into this role, as well as the current USDA priorities and how that might impact us in blueberries. Madam Undersecretary, thank you for joining me on the Business of Blueberries.
Thank you, Casey. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, I'm excited to have you here. You know, I know we've both changed positions since we first met while you were working there with California Ag Secretary Karen Ross at CDFA. You also served on California's Water Board, which is not an easy position, and a personal history working on an organic walnut farm. So I thought we'd just start off for our audience here, blueberry industry stakeholders and others, that you could connect some dots for all of us on your journey and what kind of led you to your position here at USDA.
Yeah, so I think, you know, key is growing up on my family's organic walnut farm, just knowing the work that we did, you know, day in and day out on our farm and the partnership that we had as farmers with CDFA, with USDA, with our marketing orders, and just how that continuum and how the layers of different support networks for farmers and ranchers are so important to us in the field doing the work that we're doing. And so even as a kid, when I was 12, we started doing processing of organic walnuts. And so I called out to USDA for an ag service and asked for a buyer list. Back then, they faxed them to us. There probably wasn't much email back then. And, you know, so that really started my personal journey into connection with USDA. But of course, on our farm, working with NRCS and FSA and all the different USDA offices, certainly highlighted to me the importance of that partnership that farmers and ranchers have with both CDFA and USDA.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and just thinking about your experience there on the walnut farm, you know, working with organizations like Marketing Orders, and now in your position overseeing both the research and promotion organizations, Marketing Orders, and that connection. Did at that time your family have a working relationship with either the California Commissions or the Marketing Orders? Was your family active in those programs?
Well, certainly as processors, we were involved. One of the first things I did when I came back to the farm after college and worked in other industries for a couple of years was to start to come to the Walnut Marketing Board and Walnut Commission meetings and to be a participant in that. And, you know, there the power of marketing a product, an agricultural product, all, you know, producers pooling their money together to be able to promote our products generally, both domestically and abroad, is so important and just, you know, so crucial. We had, of course, the commission and other commissions at the California Department of Food and Agriculture. And now I'm so excited that I'm in marketing and regulatory programs, have AMS that has the checkoff programs and the marketing orders as well. I see that power and the value for producers in pooling our money together to promote our products and also to address critical needs, research needs that are specific to what we're growing and producing, as well as, of course, working with our teams at APHIS on export and import requirements as well.
Well, and I would say you have a unique advantage or vantage point, having been processor and kind of working through some of the most difficult subject matters. I mean, we referenced the Water Board here in California and, you know, your experience in the San Joaquin Valley, orchard management, not to mention some of the other issues that obviously, you know, whether you're a row crop or you're a specialty crop that agriculture faces. But that vantage point that you've had, you know, what would you identify as some of the big changes you've witnessed or experienced in the industry, you know, both in your role in California and now federally?
Yeah, you know, when I started at the Central Valley Regional Water Quality Control Board, which is a mouthful, we were charged with implementing and expanding through a court order the Irrigated Lands Regulatory Program, which is about water quality for irrigated lands. And what was key at that point was that we, yes, absolutely needed to implement this, but the how we implement this and in partnership with the industry, in partnership with researchers and science, in partnership with local communities and environmentalists and environmental justice, bringing all of those different voices to the table as we developed the program on how was very, very important. And I think that really put the kind of the passion in what I do, which is really just making sure we have all perspectives at the table. Sometimes it takes a lot of work. Oftentimes it takes a lot of work up front, but the product means that we have something that's workable and doable and meets the varying different needs. And so it's threading that needle that is tough, takes patience and time, but also the product is something that is much better for agriculture, for our communities. And certainly that's something that I think, you know, I've really enjoyed. Same when I was working with the California Department of Food and Agriculture, working on climate smart agriculture. When I first came, I don't even think we were using climate smart agriculture as a term. And by the time I left 6 years, 6.5 years later, we had invested $1 billion in funds to farmers and ranchers who are implementing a whole suite of climate smart agriculture practices, everything from water use efficiency to for dairies, dairy digesters and composting to healthy soils practices and a whole bunch of things in between, tractor replacement, land conservation, so many different things, because we know in agriculture, just like in most industries, it's not one thing, but it's the continuum and it's a suite of all these different things that are really important. So yeah, just the transition of the industry in 6 years from really not even talking about climate smart agriculture to implementing and championing climate smart agriculture. And I think leading climate smart agriculture for a lot of the world as well.
Yeah. Well, no surprise, California, you know, taking the first stab at a lot of those programs and really trying to, you know, lead the way. And really, like you described, just knowing the water, obviously, when you're talking about the tractor replacement program, just the complications that go into what investments already been made by growers and farmers and ranchers and against what some of these new expectations are going to be. And just the difficulty of those conversations, the intensity of those transitions. So, you know, you're well aware, and I know you haven't been in the position very long, but I thought we could just see what you're thinking are the early wins or changes that you've brought with you that we should highlight, you know, in your role there at USDA.
Yeah, so I think one of our big focuses at USDA, certainly on equity, on making sure that we're feeding healthy food and getting food to people. But one is also on more and better markets. And this is one that I think both at AMS and APHIS, we've really been focused on, which is it's about supply chains. It's about maximizing opportunities for farmers, for processors, for the U.S. food supply chain to be able to maximize their opportunities and bring more of the food dollar back to farmers and ranchers. And so that is really about expanding more and better markets. We saw with the pandemic how rigid sometimes our food system can be. And so to add some of that flexibility, to add enhanced and growing processing capacity, distribution capacity, both at the local, the regional, the national and the global levels are all very important and intertwined together, and they just allow more marketing opportunities for producers and processors. So that's a big one that we're focused on. Through the American Rescue Plan, we have $4 billion for what we call Build Back Better food systems. And so we're really starting with meat and poultry processing, and we've announced also $200 million for organic transition, and we're working on that as well. But there's additional funding that we're also looking at and working internally at USDA and listening to stakeholders on how we really best can utilize that money to build more resilience, build more redundancy into the food system so that we just have more opportunities for producers to participate and more outlets for producers to have, as well as for consumers to be able to have more opportunities to purchase food as well. So that's a big one that we're looking at. Of course, fairness and equity is key to what we're doing as well. This is really about ensuring that all producers, all actors in the food supply chain have the same access as someone like me, who is a 12-year-old who is able to call Foreign Ag Service and get a list of potential buyers overseas, for all producers to be able to have that same access. And so just making sure things are translated to other languages, but then also making sure that our programs are designed in a way to serve our audience in the most efficient way possible. You know, certainly that's another thing as well. So equity is a key part of what we're doing as well. I mentioned organic. That's another one where we've been really working on organic standards. There's a lot of organic standards that have been developed and gone through the National Organic Standards Board, now starting to work on with our team at the National Organic Program on implementing those standards. We know that way back when the Organic Farming Production Act was developed, organic was not meant to be a stagnant industry, but one that growed and evolved over time. And so organic standards is another really important one. And then integrating organic throughout what we're doing. And so we haven't had some wins yet. We're really just starting to do that, but we've been more focused on organic transition funds and standards, but that's our next step as well.
Yeah. Well, I want to dig in on some of this and dive deeper into some of the USDA priorities as you go forward and how that might impact blueberries. But before we do, let's take a quick break for our crop report. The harvest in South America is well underway, and we've been receiving weekly updates from our colleagues there. So here, once again, is your blueberry crop report.
It's time for your blueberry crop report, an update on crop conditions and markets from important blueberry growing areas. Today, you'll hear from Mario Ramirez in Mexico, Luis Vegas in Peru, and Andres Armstrong in Chile. This was recorded on January 26th, 2022.
Hello, this is Luis with the crop report from Peru. Up until the end of week 3 of 2022, which is the week ending on January 23rd. Peru has shipped a total of 464 million pounds of fresh blueberries worldwide, representing a growth of 34% in volume versus our previous season. From this overall volume, 54% has been shipped to the US throughout the season. What happened during week 3 of 2022? Peru shipped a total of 5.1 million pounds of fresh blueberries worldwide. From the overall volume, from week 3, 70% was shipped to the US, representing 3.5 million pounds, which are expected to arrive the U.S. market during late February. So that's the crop report from Peru for this week. Thank you.
Hi, everyone. Here, Mario, with the Mexican Blueberries Report for the third week of 2022. This week, we see a fall in the volumes of around 800,000 pounds, exporting a total of 2,142,000 pounds to all the world. It means a fall of 28% respecting last week, and an increment of 2% in price for the Mexican blueberries specifically. For all the season, we have exported a total of 38,500,000 pounds. Also, for the same week, Mexico exported a total of 15,000 pounds of frozen blueberries, less than 1% of the total volume of frozen blueberries in the USA market. That's all in my report. I hope to see you next week. Thank you very much.
Hello, this is Andres Armstrong with the Chilean crop report up to week 2. This is information up to January 16th. During week 2, Chile recorded an export of 17.4 million pounds of fresh blueberries, which is 5% less than the same week last season. until January 16th, the accumulated export of fresh blueberries is 146 million pounds, 11% less compared to the same date last season. The situation all over exports has been felt stronger in the markets because of harvesting was slow in the first part of the season and because of the logistic problems that everybody knows. However, the difference has been narrowing and we are currently in the period of greatest arrivals. The 17.4 million pounds of week two seems low. However, in week one, the volume shipped was 31.9 million pounds. The average of the last 4 weeks is over 22 million pounds per week that are reaching the markets and will remain high supply until late February. The main destination during week two was the US and Canada with 74% of the volume. The situation is different looking at the total volume accumulated to date, where the US and Canada has 47%. The supply of organic blueberries continues to increase its share along with the increased contribution for the southern zone. In week two, the organic supply had 14.5% share with 2.5 million pounds. This is our report for the week. Thank you very much.
Well, thanks so much to our busy growers and our colleagues who take time to participate in these reports. As a reminder, you can go to the new USHBC website where you'll find our Data and Insight Center to see more data of what's happening in the blueberry industry. We've made the snapshot view of USDA's data on production and price an online resource for everyone to access easily and quickly. Make sure you go to ushbc.org/data to check that out. Well, let's go back to our featured conversation with USDA Undersecretary Jenny Moffitt. Jenny, I know when you said bring the food dollar back to farmers and ranchers, that got a lot of our audience probably listening. But you also talked about enhancing local and regional supply chains. And so I thought you could talk a little bit more in detail about what you and the team at USDA are doing in this area.
Yeah, absolutely. Some of the things that we've announced recently is at the end of December, mid-December, we announced $400 million through our feeding programs for really, it's a partnership with states. And states, of course, will partner with, I think, local industries and nonprofits and others. It's really about being able to use our procurement dollars in a way that also is bringing more market opportunities to producers as well. So we have $400 million that'll be allocated out to the states, and the states are going to work with that funding to be able to procure from local regional producers within the state in the regional area of their states to be able to buy food for food banks. So this is very exciting for us. And then also just more recently, we also announced an additional $500 million that's going to be for, again, a similar type of a model with this in partnerships with states to procure local and regional foods for schools as well. So really looking at every avenue that we have, certainly we're working with the producers, we're working with, you know, looking at identifying funding opportunities, market access opportunities that producers have, but then also looking at our work and the lever points that we have at USDA through our procurement dollars, also enabling and empowering the states and producers to be able to join forces to feed and to provide really good local healthy food to food banks and schools as well. So it's the continuum. As a farmer, as someone who, you know, grew up and, you know, listened a lot to my dad, there's not just one silver bullet. It's a yes and approach, all the different ways in which we're doing that. So procurement is one. Another, of course, is the $4 billion that I mentioned that we have in funding for local and regional food systems as well. We're also working on competition and making sure that everything from seed all the way to marketing opportunities, that there's robust competition and for everyone in the supply chain to be able to participate as well. So many different avenues that we're looking at in these this More and Better Markets initiative that we have.
Well, I appreciate that kind of connecting the dot about the multifaceted approach that all of us in agriculture need to be thinking about, whether, you know, in our case, you know, we've been pushing in our new strategic plan a big push to export, leveraging foreign ag service dollars. Certainly procurement with schools has been a huge part of what we've done over the years and trying to work with our industry to take advantage of programs like the one you're just describing. You know, we've benefited from many multi-million dollar buys from USDA in that space. But just the point you're making about making sure that, you know, we're finding these programs, we're engaged in these programs, both from a national or state perspective. But any specific advice for us in the blueberry industry on these types of programs that you could offer us to to be thinking about, either as the RMP program or as, you know, the states are listening, thinking about their role?
Yeah, I mean, I think what's key is that we're doing these cooperative agreements, these partnerships with the states, because the states know the local industry, they know the local food bank networks the best. And so we in DC know, you know, what we're good at. And then, of course, partnerships with states is so important for that local and regional part. So just, you know, it is about encouraging partnership. It's about encouraging folks that don't normally work together to start to work together more. And again, really about getting, in this case, you know, healthy blueberries into schools and to food banks. As you know, and I'm not going to talk to blueberry producers about the power of blueberries, but I know as a walnut producer, we just talk about all the antioxidant powers and everything like that I know blueberries have as well. And so, you know, just getting that healthy food into schools, into food banks, and then looking also at what does the infrastructure need? And I think this is our next layer is there infrastructure that's needed to also build these connections? So we're doing this funding now on the procurement side, but, you know, what is needed for that brick and mortar foundation to keep those dollars flowing and that ability to move food into schools, into food banks, hospitals, other institutional buyers as well is really important. One thing I will say is we do have the local agricultural marketing program. It's called the LAMP grants. And some of that is really about doing that, is funding people coming together to solve some of these really tricky issues to be able to open access to local markets. So the LAMP grants are one that certainly I'd encourage the blueberry industry to look into. We just announced a series of funding in November, this through Farm Bill funding. So we have more funding coming out next year as well.
Excellent. Well, certainly look into that. And I know your experience in walnuts and the organic nature of your farm, but also for blueberries, another subject area that I thought you could kind of speak to our industry about is the way in which organic gets elevated in the marketplace as something that drives volume and dollar margin for our growers in our industry. And just thinking about how our organic blueberry growers and marketers can take a better advantage of any of these programs that you have at USDA to kind of accelerate that growth.
Absolutely. And we've been having conversations across USDA about how do we integrate? And this has been happening for years now. And of course, picking up the pace again, because we now have an organic policy advisor, Marty Carlin, who's really helping to shepherd a lot of this process too. But just all the conversations across USDA, ensuring that organic is part of the programs that are available to producers, whether that is NRCS programs to marketing programs. And so we know that that is such an important part. And then I would just highlight that, of course, we're working on standards development that I mentioned before, as well as enforcing existing standards. And that is a really important piece as we talk about the value add of organic. Organic, as producers know, have many different practices that are really, really important to being what we call organic, and consumers trust and value that organic brand. And they do that because of the enforcement, because of the monitoring and the tracking and the verification that this is truly grown organically. So the work that the National Organic Program in partnership with certifiers is doing to really make sure that consumers are getting what they're paying for when they purchase that value add product is really important as well.
I would say that's an absolutely important role for USDA in that enforcement area of just ensuring that what consumers are seeing and getting are these things that they believe they are. And I know that in my tenure, both here and in when I was at Cut Flowers, it was just something we really counted on from your vantage point to make sure that that kind of playing field was being done fairly, and following the rules was a really important piece of that. So we're going to take a quick break here for our marketing boost. We'll be right back to this conversation in a moment. But for now, here's USHBC NABC Vice President of Marketing and Communications, Jennifer Sparks.
Thanks, Casey. With February just around the corner, it provides another important reason for people to grab a boost of blue. Yes, February is Heart Health Month, and blueberries are certified as heart healthy through the American Heart Association Heart Check Food Certification Program. These calendar events are times when consumers are receiving messages and exposed to content more so than ever on the importance of staying healthy and knowing what is good for the heart. Let's make sure that blueberries are included in that space too. USHBC will be doing our part throughout the month to show the health benefits of blueberries, and you can too. The more we collectively promote blueberries to all of our audiences, the more we can get people grabbing a boost of blue. USHBC offers easy-to-download health fact sheets for your customer communications and website, social media content, and digital ads. We make it easy for you. Just go to ushbc.org/toolkits to find these Heart Health Month resources. And while you're there, check out the Nutrition Month Toolkit for your planning for the month of March. It's all there at ushbc.org/toolkits. This has been your marketing boost. Thank you for your partnership. As together, we inspire the world to grab a boost of blue. Casey, back to you.
Thanks, Jenny. Now back to today's episode with USDA Undersecretary Jenny Moffitt. Jenny, one thing I want to make sure that we talk about before we go is the topic of climate change. You know, this is affecting all of agriculture in certain ways, and certainly it impacted the berry industry this past year. We had both record-breaking temperatures, a heat dome is what they called it in the Pacific Northwest, and then, you know, 6 months later up in that same region dealing with flooding. What could you tell us about USDA's efforts in the area of climate change, and how can the industry more effectively engage in what these efforts are?
Yeah, absolutely. And as I mentioned, there are several different priorities that we have in this administration that Secretary Vilsack has identified as a priority, and climate change, climate smart agriculture and forestry is one of those. And certainly if you've been following USDA news, you've heard a lot about the work that USDA is doing in this space. Climate change is certainly affecting all of us across the globe, but especially farmers and ranchers who are by nature a land-based industry. And we saw that in the summer with the heat dome and the heat waves that we've had, and then we experience it also with floods. We experience it in California and other Western states with, you know, more extreme fires as well. So we're certainly experiencing climate change currently, and there's a lot of opportunity at the same time as we learn how to adapt to climate change. There's also a lot of opportunity for us to do practices that also mitigate and can sequester carbon and mitigate climate change as well. So we're really looking at both at USDA. I'll speak to what APHIS is doing just on phytosanitary and plant pests with relation to climate change. We're really looking at expanding our modeling. We have an incredible team of scientists and modelers who are looking at how pest flights change, their life cycles change, their movement changes because of climate change, and really starting to expand that to many different more crops. And so that's just one example of what we're doing so that we can know what are the big threat pests that are coming up or coming down from Canada or moving across the states because of climate change, and how are those being affected by climate change. At the same time, of course, across USDA, we're looking at opportunities. We're getting ideas from producers right now on opportunities for innovation in climate change as well. What are those innovative practices? We know soil health, and we've had a soil health initiative at USDA for quite some time. We know soil health is a key part of that, that the ability of how we manage our soils to sequester carbon is so important to reducing the impacts of climate change, and also for producers to be able to adapt as well. We know soil health is both a resilience as well as a mitigation measure.
You know, one of the areas that is a really important topic for our industry is the way in which plants kind of handle weather events like flooding or like heat. And so we talk a lot about both the soil health, but also the plant, the varieties themselves, and, you know, where these plants are located, and the transition that growers have to go through if they lose a crop due to one of these weather events, and just kind of the challenges that it's not just, you know, in the case of recently the floods that flowed through, but it's the, you know, many months later, not knowing that if those plants actually did survive or what those yields would be. A real study on this, trying to understand, are we growing in the right regions still today? And of course, this is kind of big picture stuff for all of our growers to be thinking about. But, you know, the science and varieties, the research that's going on and trying to understand, you know, what makes a resilient blueberry plant in these kind of climate environments, and the work we could be doing and we are doing in advancing those types of varieties, those climate resistant kind of stronger variety types. But maybe you could talk a little bit about where that kind of smart ag line of, you know, when is it USDA's program role to help encourage and transition growers versus, you know, the growers themselves thinking about these things as they're dealing with them year in and year out?
Yeah, USDA has, I see several different roles and ways in which USDA plays. So, of course, we have the Agricultural Research Service and a lot of our research, which is doing the things that you just described, conducting some of that firsthand research on just different practices, how to adapt, you know, when to provide shade cover, when not to, all those different things, or if shade cover is even effective. There's also, of course, funding that we have across the board. So we have special crop block grant dollars, which I know many industries have used to apply for funding to better understand production systems with climate change, as well as, of course, marketing. And then there's also, you know, working with NRCS and Farm Services Agency and all of the different agencies that we have that work hand in glove with producers day in and day out on production practices, incentivizing different practices as well, and being able to fund some of those different changes in production practice. So there's both the research, there's of course the grant making, as well as the partnerships with you guys in marketing orders, because of course you have the opportunity to really serve as the nexus and the glue for all of that for blueberries in this case as well. And then of course, working with, you know, funding opportunities directly for producers.
Well, I mean, I feel like we could keep going here. This has been a real pleasure and a great opportunity for us to just kind of sit down and pick apart some of the things that you're seeing in this new position there at USDA. But I do want to kind of close out. And if you had any specific thoughts that you'd like to leave our audience with, our industry, what are two or three things that you want to be sure, you know, our blueberry industry knows about your efforts in your new position on their behalf?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think, you know, we've talked about more and better markets. How do we, again, bring top dollar back, our food dollar back more to the producers and processors and everyone in between, and then not have more access to markets on the consumer side as well. That's been a big priority. Increasing equity, climate smart agriculture is a key one. But I think what is most important is that we're hearing from you guys, from marketing orders, from producers, throughout the country, because no one solution is the right solution for different areas of the country. So please know that our door is always open. We really do love to hear from you guys. And I see my role as in service to American agriculture and look forward to continuing to do that.
Well, I think I speak on behalf of all of our industry, certainly our leadership, in looking forward to working with you in your new position. And congratulations again on this exciting opportunity for you and certainly our country to have your experience, your leadership, and these priorities out front in helping advance our country's agriculture. So thank you for being with us on the Business of Blueberries today.
Thank you.
Really appreciated this opportunity to sit down with the Undersecretary and kind of just understand more specifically where her thoughts are and the priorities are going into this next year. Really a great opportunity to talk to her. And I look forward to the conversation again. We'll have her back and encourage more conversations like these between our industry and the department. So I hope you enjoyed it. That's it for episode 83. If you have any interest in any of these programs, we'd like to help if we can. As Jenny said, they'd love to hear from those of you in our industry. Feel free to contact our offices and we'll make sure to get you pointed in the right direction. And just one more ask before you leave. This is a new year and we're hoping that you can help us kind of position this podcast as an important resource for our industry. In fact, Spotify just started allowing podcast ratings and reviews. So if you listen on Spotify and you're enjoying this podcast, please consider, as part of your New Year's resolutions, being one of the first ones to leave us a rating and review on that platform. It makes a big difference. It helps other people find our podcast. And certainly we'd love to have your thoughts and ratings there on that platform. So thank you again so much for listening. We'll be back next week with more innovation, collaboration, family, and hard work right here on the Business of Blueberries.